So welcome to another In the Moments of Light podcast, and today I'm absolutely thrilled to be talking with a fellow O-Books author, David Giroux Irving, about his book, The Protein Myth. So welcome, David.
Thanks very much. I'm glad to be here, and thanks for having me.
No, not at all. It's great. Now, I'm absolutely fascinated by this book, because you're saying something with it, which is kind of going to change the way we all think about what we eat and how we produce our food.
Well, this is something that I think we need to do, because the direction that we're heading, our meat-based diet is really very destructive to the earth, and it's also very destructive to our health. And this is something we generally don't think about, and I think it behooves us to become more aware of it.
Well, this is pretty earth shattering. You're telling people that basically it's the end of Big Macs.
I would love to see the end of Big Mac, because Big Mac is not very healthy for us.
I don't know. I've not had one for about 20 years, I think. And last time I did, I think I was violently ill.
Well, you're doing your health a big favor, that's for sure, because this can lead to heart disease and stroke and all kinds of very bad conditions.
But it's not just Big Macs. It's all kinds of meat, then. It's every kind of meat.
Well, yes, it's all animal protein, really. And this is just not a whim on my part. This is scientifically backed evidence. And it includes meat, and includes dairy products, and includes seafood and poultry and all animal flesh, really.
Okay, because obviously some people that would be, let's say, vegetarian or vegan would be making that switch, maybe from a personal choice that they don't want to see another animal suffer and be killed. But that's not really your point here, is it?
Well, there are two paths for going vegan, I think. One concerns the suffering and concern and compassion for animals, and the other is for our own health and for nutrition. So I think there are two reasons, and of course, the two can intersect. For me personally, it was the main reason was my concern for animals and the way they're treated.
And were you ever a meat eater yourself?
Yes, I was. I was, like most people. We're all raised in this Western culture to eat meat and to believe in eating meat, and we grew up this way. And unless something takes us off that path, unless we learn something that this is really the wrong direction, then we just keep eating animal products the rest of our lives, and unfortunately suffer the consequences.
Right. So obviously, if you go back a few thousand years, didn't mankind or humankind eat meat naturally? Are we not naturally a carnivore?
Well, not really. Now, this is a very interesting area of study, because in about the 1920s or the 1930s, some anthropologists started creating this myth, really, that man, the beast hunter, the mighty hunter, going out and killing all these animals for food. But the archaeological evidence doesn't really show that. And fortunately, some anthropologists have been coming forward in recent years and pointing this out. When you go way, way back in time, millions of years, and the human species have been around here on Earth for about 7 million years or so. And during that time, in order to survive, really what humans had to do was to cooperate. They couldn't go out hunting big game. They would have been destroyed, and they often were. They were often the hunted, not the hunters. And so this is very interesting. It's very interesting. It gets very involved, but I would say that originally we were not these wild beast hunters. Later on, we did become more geared towards hunting and taking down big game animals.
Got you. And then obviously, over the last 100, 200 years, the whole production of meat for human consumption has been completely, I guess, industrialized.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, since the Industrial Revolution, right.
So to depersonalize this, just to take away that, you know, it might be someone's personal choice not to eat meat, or indeed to eat meat, what's the scientific evidence that leads to this myth, or if you like, or generated this myth that we need protein, and you're now saying that it's a myth that we need it, therefore let's not do it?
The myth began back in the 19th century, and that got started when a German scientist by the name of Karl Voigt, who was a professor of physiology in Munich, observed that laborers consumed about 118 grams of protein a day. And he said, well, these are big, hefty fellows, and they're intelligent, and so they must be using their intelligence to determine that this is the amount of protein that we need. Now, obviously, that's a very unscientific way of going about.
Sure, yeah.
Coming to a conclusion like this, but he did. And he set that standard. It became known as the Voigt standard, and it was used all across Europe. It got raised even higher in some countries. Italy went all the way up to 146 grams, and Sweden went all the way up into 180 grams. And it got brought here to the United States by a fellow by the name of Wilbur Olin Atwater. And he was studying with Voigt in Munich. And he came back to the United States, and he became the head of the very first nutrition laboratory founded here in America in about 1896. And about 1902, he would publish these almanacs that would come out every year. He did a lot of good work, really. But in 1902, he established that we needed 125 grams of protein a day. Mm-hmm. And that was just way too much. And a couple years later, another fellow came along, and he lowered it down to between 30 and 50 grams. And he did some scientific research to prove that, but nobody followed him because everybody liked this higher protein consumption that Atwater had set. And so that became the standard all the way up until the Second World War, when Roosevelt established the nutrition commissions, and they came in and they lowered it down to 60 grams for women and 70 grams for men. And today it's down to, set by the National Academy of Sciences, as about 56 grams for men and 44 grams for women.
In terms of meat, then, what was that? Is that like an 8 ounce steak or something like that?
Well, if you take an eight ounce steak, that's about 70 grams of protein, right?
Okay, right. But you're saying that that's whole, even that 1 gram of protein isn't needed.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. No, we need protein. We have to have protein. But
okay, but it's where you get it from.
No, it's the amount. It's where you get it from, and it's the amount. It's both.
Okay, right.
Now, see, the World Health Organization says that women only need 29 grams of protein, and men only need 37.5 grams of protein. And let me just to put it in context, say a veggie burger, that's about 18 grams of protein.
Okay.
Or a cup of peas is 9 grams of protein. 4 ounces
right.
of tofu, that's about 11 grams of protein. So it doesn't take much to get up to 37 and meet our protein needs. As long as we meet our calorie needs every day, we'll definitely get enough protein.
Got you. But is there a difference then between non-meat sources of protein and meat sources of protein?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because meat sources of protein, that's what's bad for us. That's what causes many forms of cancer, diabetes, stroke, heart disease. It's been linked to Alzheimer's disease, you know. So plant protein, that's good. Meat protein, that's not good.
And so let's look across the whole animal kingdom then. So if you've got a carnivorous animal that's eating meat, then is that more tuned, and is that meat okay for that animal?
Well, there are some animals that are carnivorous, like cats, for example. They're carnivorous. Gorillas, for example, are either omnivorous or I don't think they eat any meat, for example. It depends on the species.
Sure. But you're saying that as humans, though, even though we've got accustomed to eating meat and being able to process it, aren't naturally meat eaters.
No, and physiologically we aren't either. We're
Now, that's kind of interesting, because then that means that the whole meat industry then, I guess, wouldn't like your book very much.
Oh no, definitely they would not. They would not like it one bit because my book is designed to get people not to eat meat and not to consume dairy products.
So if you like, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I do eat a lot of vegetables, and we grow them in our garden as well. I love them, really fresh. They haven't travelled very far, but I am partial to the odd bit of meat. But I have, funnily enough, I've been going off it over the years, and so probably if I go to a restaurant, I'd choose fish out of choice. But from what you're saying before, that even fish might not be good for us.
Well, fish is not good for us for other reasons as well, because fish are so contaminated, and they contain dioxins and PCBs and all kinds of contaminants that, you know, they can cause disease in themselves, including cancer. And the FDA has the Food and Drugs Administration even agrees with that and puts information out about that. But fish is popular because, well, everybody says that you should consume fish.
And if you were, how do you, let's say somebody likes their meat,
Right.
and you want to kind of get them off meat in the same way you might want to get somebody off smoking or alcohol, how would you recommend someone went about it?
That's a good question because most people who consume meat don't want to get off of it. I think the best thing to do is just to point out the dangers to our own personal health and point out also what puts the food on their table, how the animals are so mistreated in on our factory farms, how they're slaughtered, and that's enough for some people.
I guess there's no equivalent, you know, the nicotine patch you might have for getting off smoking, there's no equivalent of that for meat yet.
No, because meat is not addicting, and you know people can quit cold turkey right now.
If you excuse the pun, cold turkey.
Right, exactly.
I got it. Otherwise, you could have a couple of patches in the back of the book, couldn't you? That'd be very useful to people who just tear off. Except, but also, there's a bigger thing going on here, isn't it? It's not just about whether we like meat or don't like meat, or we feel compassion to animals, but from a holistic point of view, the amount of meat that we're producing just for these 6 to 7 billion people on the planet is consuming huge amounts of energy.
Well, yes, and it's polluting the atmosphere. I mean, the gases from an estimated 56 billion animals are slaughtered for food around the world, and all these gases go up in the atmosphere, and already they account for 18% of greenhouse gases. And also, what do you do with the waste from all these billions of animals? Mm-hmm. I mean, it gets stored in huge mountains of dung, and it gets put in lagoons, and then they scoop out the sludge from that and spread it as manure over the fields. Mm-hmm. And this all seeps down into the earth and gets into our groundwater. And so it's contaminating the atmosphere. And also there's the question of land usage, where we put all this livestock. And the United Nations estimates already that 38% of the ice-free land surface is taken up with livestock. Now, that's a lot. So when if you consider that, like you said, just mentioned the figure 6.7 billion people presently on the Earth, and we're supposed to increase to about 9 billion in the next 35 years, and the food, the meat, and dairy products to feed those additional people are supposed to double. So how much ice-free land surface is going to be taken up then with all these animals? I mean, it's just conceivable that eventually we're going to use all our land just to eat meat. And
isn't the essential problem is what right are we as one race on the planet that represents actually a very small percentage of the total biomass to increase our population from 3 billion to 6 billion to 9 billion? Isn't one of the solutions to this, and I don't mean this in any sort of eugenics kind of way, to think about the rates of production of human beings?
Well, yes, very good point. But who's going to stop it? You know,
that's only, for sure, yeah.
No, only some countries, like China, I think, will you know, dare to put any rules on how many children a family can have.
For sure. But I guess if we don't address it, then it might get addressed outside our control.
Yes, yes. And food supply is going to be a problem, too. I mean, maybe wars are just going to continue, increase to kill everybody off, so the world isn't overpopulated.
And, of course, James Lovelock has that idea, doesn't he, of Gaia being an entity and a being and a consciousness and also being self-limiting.
Well, yeah, that's what we should do.
Yeah.
So
are you a lone voice with this message then, David, or are there people at the UN and internationally working on this and thinking about it?
Oh, no, I'm not a lone voice at all. I mean, the animal rights movement is pretty large, and it's growing all the time. And, you know, interestingly, I thought it was much larger in England than it is, but somebody told me recently that it's not nearly as large as it is in the United States. Here in the United States, the animal rights movement is a loud enough voice that everybody recognizes it and knows what it is.
Interesting. And obviously, but also in America, you're very large meat eaters. So not everyone going over there. I think an 8-ounce steak is large, but when you see these 24-ounce steaks, I think you could feed a family of 24 with it probably.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're big meat eaters over here.
But you know, it sounds like your message with the book and the protein myth itself is it's almost like just a wake-up call, I guess, to say, look, do you realise that this is not about a fad, it's not about necessarily your compassion for animals, but it's about our health, and it's about how we manage and caretake the planet.
Yes, yes, very much. I mean, it seems to me that the way we grow up believing in consuming meat, and the fact that it's produced and given to us in a very cruel fashion, we don't think about that when we grow up, when we're growing up. But really, isn't it, it's kind of hard to deny that if animals are slaughtered on factory farms in very cruel ways, and then we eat that meat, doesn't that make us participants in it? I mean, it's kind of hard to avoid that conclusion. And we grow up this way, and kind of unwittingly we're drawn into this kind of cruelty-based way of living. We get it in the drugs that we produce, that that animal researchers find through very cruel methods, and they're also bilking the public of billions of tax dollars to get to perform all this unnecessary research. It's in our cosmetics that we use. It's in our cleaning products. I mean, animal products are even used in the tires, automobile tires that we use to get around in. So, I mean, I think it affects our consciousness. And if we just take for granted that it's all right to depend on cruelty in life, I mean, this affects our consciousness. It affects our interactions with one another. It affects our family relationship. It affects the relationship between nations, I think. So to me, it's just a very important subject, and we're just getting around to becoming aware of it. And I'm a small part of that awareness, I think.
Well, David, I think that's a really, really good point. That this is it's got a, if you like, there's a spiritual angle to this. And it's not that there's any sort of karmic retribution angle, but we just got, I guess, a collective responsibility to really think about how we live our lives and how we work on this and work with this beautiful planet that we live on. So, listen, I wish you lots of luck with the book, though. It sounds a very important book to get out of. How will people get hold of you, and how will they get hold of the book?
Well, I have a website. It's called... And I use the number one in this. It's called theproteinmyth1.com. And if anybody wants to get in touch with me personally, they can email me at dgsworkshop.net. DGS.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure I put those links on the bottom of this podcast. I've been Tom Evans. This is another in the Moments of Light series of podcasts. Been great to talk to you, David.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Tom.
I think it's very important that this book has come out at this very pivotal time. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today and with the world with the book.
Thank you.